seriously want.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
5 and all eyes are on Florida. What Nicholas Cruz did yesterday with his AR-15 and his clips of ammunition as he killed 17 at a high school he had attended but was kicked out of last year. And then obviously the many that he injured. And once again, we're off to the races. This seems to be happening almost like every 3 days somewhere in America. It's a gun control issue. It's a mental health issue. Everybody seems to have an answer for why it occurred and what should be done to curb it or eliminate it, but we still don't have all the details on who this guy is and what his background is. So let's connect down in Florida with Joyce Kaufman. She's radio host on 850 WFTL in Miami. Thanks for jumping on board again, Joyce.
Not a problem, Curtis. I wish it were under better circumstances.
Oh, no, understood. But, you know, I'm almost immune to this because this is happening so frequently around our country on a regular basis. And it's not the terrorists who have pledged themselves to destroy our Western civilization, but it's our own homegrown sons who are doing this on a regular basis.
Yeah, no, there's no question in my mind that we have monsters in our midst. And we're not being very successful at recognizing them and circumventing this kind of behavior. We had a copycat again today. A young girl slipped a note under a principal's office door saying that she was going to bring a gun to school tomorrow and do the same thing.
But Joyce, what do we know about Nicholas Cruz? Was he on medication? Did he have any kind of mental health record that we have access to? If you could flesh it out a little bit, because clearly things are coming at us fast and furiously about his background.
Yes, he was. He does have a history of mental health issues. He has been treated. He has been medicated, all of the above. About in November of last year, his adoptive mother died. He had lost his adopted father 13 years prior to that, so he basically was orphaned in November. He and his brother have had, they've been living from different houses to different houses. And, you know, he's one of these kids who everybody suspected was going to, you know, lose it one day and do something terribly violent. He gave every single signal that you could ask for, which is why he was under mental health treatment to begin with.
Now, how did he procure the gun? What do we know about the place he bought it, whether it was legal or illegal?
It was legally obtained in the state of Florida. An 18-year-old can purchase a long gun, a rifle, a shotgun, any one of them. A very simple background check is done based on demographics. They don't even take fingerprints. So, you know, he obtained it legally. Where'd he get the money? Well, he's always worked, apparently. For the last 2 years, he's had a record of working in a fast food restaurant in Broward County. He's living now up in Palm Beach County and working at a dollar store. So he certainly had money and was able to buy the weapon.
So now we consider Florida a rubber stamp state in terms of when you go into a gun shop, you purchase a gun legally. It's almost slam bam. Thank you, ma'am. Here's your gun as long as you fill out the paperwork. Is there any waiting period at all there in Florida?
Not for a long gun. At 18, he would not have been able to buy a handgun. You have to be 21 to purchase a handgun, and there is a wait period there. But to buy a shotgun or a rifle, he basically filled out the paperwork, and as soon as the really simple background check was done, he was able to pick up the weapon.
So he couldn't get a handgun until he's 21, but he could get an AR-15, and I'm assuming he purchased the clips, which held anywhere from 15 to 20 shots, along with the ammunition, at that same gun shop?
It doesn't have to be so. That we're not sure yet, and they're magazines is what they're called, and he could buy them.
I think we lost Joyce Kaufman temporarily. Could you take Ryan Mongoluch, the disqualificator, put it to the southeast instead of the southwest? I know you prefer the drier air of Phoenix, but let's go for a little humidity here back in Florida. Sorry for the discombobulation, Joyce.
That's okay. I do this for a living. I know what happens.
Okay, so you basically painted the portrait of this guy, but he didn't have a criminal record that we know of.
No, not that we know of.
So we only know that in his own social postings on social network, he was giving us indications of what he was hoping to do. What forms did that take?
Well, he had a lot of pictures on his Facebook page and on Twitter of violent scenes. Lots of blood and gore, animal decapitations, just kind of bizarre, bloody, gory stuff. And back in September of last year, he actually did a video blog, and he said that he was one of these guys who was going to be a shooter, a school shooter. And it was reported to the FBI. And they claimed that they were unable to track him down, which seems pretty absurd since the guy who reported it gave them his name. The community he lived in. You know, apparently it just didn't get to the right people in time, but they knew because they immediately went to that vlogger yesterday when the shooting took place. So they had enough on him to know where to go to get more information.
So he gave us signals that he might potentially do this. It wasn't just sort of like a Clockwork Orange scenario in his head that he was just having these psychotic episodes as theater of the mind, that he might actually do it. Should we cast any blame on the social networking outlets that he used to advertise these desires?
Look, you know, this is a question that we're all asking ourselves today. You know, should there have been some intervention? Do these social network sites have a responsibility to report such activity? And we can talk about that, but really what we need to be talking about today, if you're a parent here in Broward County, is what do we do to prevent this from happening again? Because we can, you know, make all kinds of gun laws, but we can't outlaw mental illness. And we have been very ineffective at protecting our children. We send them off. So to get into the Broward County Courthouse, and you know this in New York as well, I have to go through a metal detector. There's only one entrance and egress to that courthouse. Why are we taking better care of civil servants in our court system than we are of our children in schools? I've been to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. You can get onto that campus in a variety of ways and never encounter an adult.
Now, was there a armed police officer off duty assigned to the campus when the shooting took place?
Yes, there was an armed police officer, but nowhere near where he came in. This is a kid who knew that school, knew what would be happening at that hour of the day, knew there would be very little adults, very few adults present, actually went to a freshman building. You know, I believe he did that to inflict the most pain and suffering on those of us who have to watch this.
Now, I equate Florida's view towards gun ownership very similar to what New Hampshire's is, you know, live free or die. Do we know if there were any teachers who were licensed to carry there who may have had weapons on them on the campus, or are they forbidden to bring their weapons onto the campus?
That's a great question, Curtis. I actually am part of a group that shoots at a range on a regular basis, two of whom are teachers at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. They are not allowed to bring their weapons, although they're licensed, onto the campus. So they leave them locked in boxes in their cars.
Wow. Locked in boxes in their cars where the car could be stolen, and then all of a sudden a person ends up with an unexpected gem in the car, which is, wow, we got a gun here.
You know, the parking lots are...
I think we lost Joyce again because Brian Mongoluch, he is so enamored with the Southwest instead of the Southeast. You know, you're useless. You're useless. Our disqualificator is on the top of Madison Square Garden, and oftentimes, if it is not pointed in the right direction, we lose the subjects of our interviews. That's two times. I'm not going to give you a third time, Brian Mongoluch, because three times and you're out swinging. Meantime, in addition to what is happening in Florida, everyone is on heightened alert everywhere throughout the United States. So what happens is that we have two cases here in which there were students who were threatening to basically imitate what had happened in Florida. One locally, in fact, at Brooklyn Prospect, a charter school in Windsor Terrace, just an hour after the shooting took place yesterday in Florida. Two students said they were going to shoot up the school. Information was provided to law enforcement by the charter school. They have since been arrested. Their parents have been informed. And in South Carolina, there was a teen arrested yesterday after threatening round two of Florida tomorrow. So why couldn't we be on this heightened alert all the time when students are suggesting that they are going to attend their schools that day and turn it into a Wild West shoot 'em up Dodge City? Because it's not a priority. And the social networking sites, those that run Instagram, those that run Facebook, those that run YouTube, are not going to participate in this unless they are forced to.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yes.
He's an American hero.
WABCRadio.com.
And while I was entering Penn Station off of 8th Avenue, I saw what looked like street theater. And I'm always into that street performance. It looked like they were trying to make political points. And, oh, I noticed in some of the literature and in some of the stands that they had sent up, it seemed like they were opposed to what the president had recommended at the State of the Union address, the $1.5 trillion that he wanted to devote to capital improvements that would involve a federal, local government, and private sector partnership. On the line to discuss that is Eric Weltman, Food and Water Watch. Welcome you again here to the Drive Home at 5, Eric.
Amen. Thanks for having me on, Curtis. We were out there this morning rallying against what we're calling the Trump infrastructure scam and Trump tolls. Food and Water Watch and our allies are concerned that Trump's plan is really a blueprint for Wall Street control, corporate control, and abuse of our most vital resources, the water we drink, the roads we drive on, the subways we rely upon. His agenda is clear. It's Wall Street control and privatization of our drinking water and other critical public services. You know, already millions of Americans are struggling to pay their water bills, and Food and Water Watch is concerned that Trump's plan would lead to rate hikes while making the rich richer. And bottom line, Curtis, is we would maintain it's a plan for the one percenters like Trump and his Wall Street cronies on the backs of poor people, working class Americans, and middle class Americans.
Now, Eric, I got to tell you, as I was prepared to take the escalator into the bowels of the third world Penn Station, which is in total need of repair and reconstruction. There were two people, right, but there were two people who had come in from New Jersey. They were schlepping their luggage up the one escalator that didn't work, and they would say, Curtis, why are these people protesting? Boy, if you ever take New Jersey Transit or Amtrak or any other mass transit system in, there are always delays. We want Trump to spend money on fixing infrastructure. What would you say to them specifically, these commuters who have had the living daylights beaten out of them in the last 2 years?
Yeah, look, I've been through the hell that is Penn Station plenty of times. And I Food and Water Watch, and we would all maintain that we need to really boost our investment in our infrastructure. But we would maintain the way to do so is by maintaining it, you know, in public investments. I mean, Trump's, it really is a scam. I mean, he cut $280 billion from federal infrastructure programs in the budget he called for. I mean, he's really cutting spending on infrastructure while selling it off to Wall Street. And that's just going to lead to rate hikes. It's going to lead to what we call, you know, Trump tolls. And it's going to lead to, you know,
well, how about this, Eric?
1% buddies getting richer off the backs of folks like you and me.
There's so many capital improvement efforts that are needed, infrastructure efforts needed. Let's say they set up a prototype, one or two specific projects that involve this public financing from the feds, local government, and the private sector. Would you be satisfied if there were like two projects underway, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast, where you could see the results and see if what Trump envisions can actually come about?
We've analyzed, Food and Water Watch has analyzed from, you know, experience, real life experience, what happens when private corporations run our water systems. They tried it in Flint. That didn't work out too well. You know, you see people getting, you know, worse service, polluted water, contaminated water, and they're actually paying more for it. I mean, there's a reason why businesses want to get into this business, to make money off of it. So Food and Water Watch maintains that this is it's a bad plan. It's bad for the environment. It would strip away environmental reviews. It would lead to more, you know, fracking and fossil fuel pipelines and worse than climate change. So for communities and the environment, Food and Water Watch just thinks that, you know, this is a bad plan. It's really a plan, like we said, for, you know, Trump and his one percenters. And it's not a plan that's going to benefit, you know, average Americans like you and me. I'm sure most of your listeners.
Well, tell you what, we'll see how it rolls out, because clearly this is the one issue. Capital improvement, infrastructure improvement that both Democrats and Republicans wanted to bring back to their districts. Obviously, there's a chasm now on how to do it, but we will continue to stay on this subject.
Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man with people.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Back to back, belly to belly, as we continue here on The Drive Home at 5 with yours truly, Curtis Sliwa. The New York Post has featured the former NYPD police officer, Jose Vega. At 5'10", 180, he had graduated the police academy, and now he's ballooned up to 395 pounds. He had previously retired with a full pension at $4,000 a month, but he said, no, I want the three-quarters disability because of heart problems, heart malfunction, and that would bump me up to $6,500. And so there has been a slew of people saying, oh, that fat slob Slabinski, he has only himself to blame because he was eating everything he could touch. But then all of a sudden, earlier today, during the Curtis Sliwa and Rita Cosby show from 12 to 3, we were discussing that, and an unexpected caller chimed in, his former supervisor with the NYPD, Al.
He was a fantastic cop, there is a lot of stresses in the police department. Not he was not being forced to make arrests. He was an active guy.
And then Supervisor Al gave him 5 stars.
He deserves the heart bill. And his ailments, if you read what that would entail, he has those diseases, those heart diseases, and he's not getting it. That's what his fight is about.
And the guy said he was a machine when it came to making collars.
He was so busy. I never saw him eating because he was too busy processing arrests on a continual basis. I mean, for guys or gals to be making those ridiculous comments, and I'm not saying that he had the best diet. No cop really does.
And then Supervisor Al said it wasn't until they sat him down towards the end of Jose Vega's career that he started to balloon up.
Towards the latter part of his career, when they did sit him down, again, I'm not at liberty to discuss why, that his ailments really started to progress is when he ballooned up. He was not in the street at that weight. And anyone that tells you that is lying to you.
So then I talked about all the times he must have stopped at the local Cucci Fritos joints and getting the Con Arroz habichuelas with the chuletas, the pork chops on top. And all of a sudden, who do you think called up to defend himself? Yes, former police officer Jose, I'm 395 pounds, Vega.
So I'll tell you, my experience with him,
yes.
I'm 6'2", 220 pounds, and he got out of the car, and he did run with me up 7 flights of stairs.
Hey, by the way, that was Al at a continuation talking about how he could go up a flight of steps probably to the Empire State Building, all 80 floors. But then here was Jose who chimed in.
My condition is not about food. It's not about food. My condition has to do, I was very athletic prior to joining the military, during the military, and after the military, and during my police department career. In 2007, I started suffering from hypertension when I had 10 years in the force. And in 2013 and 14, it was exacerbated where I was hospitalized about 10 times.
And then I said, now, hold on a second. What about all the guys and gals who have ripped off the pension system and claimed three-quarters disability before?
I shouldn't pay for other officers or other people that have abused the system. That's not me. That's not my condition. If I take an EKG, if you're with me and you take an EKG, my EKG is going to have three downstrokes for the rest of my life showing heart damage, an indication of heart damage or left ventricular hypertrophy.
So
and I qualify for the heart bill. I'm entitled to that benefit.
And then in addition to me calling him the Platano King because he loved his plantains, there are others who have poked fun at him. And we asked them, both Rita Cosby and yours truly, what message do you have for people like Curtis and everyone else who are fat-shaming you?
The message to the people out there, let's be civil, let's be human, let's be humane about things. This is not what America's about. This is not the way people should be, and this is one of the big problems we're having in this country.
We found out later on that he had made $500. Now, the guy could barely run it at one point, and yet he was still able to get out of the squad car because he obviously had the nose, not just for the con arroz habichuelas and the chuletas and the platanos, but he had a nose for crime. He could smell it like McGruff, the crime-fighting dog, and he'd be out of the car and pounce on the guy. Now, think of it. You're approaching 300 pounds. You pounce on somebody who's 4'8", 120 pounds, soaking wet, who just scaled the fire escape and did a break-in, right? A home invasion? You know that guy's giving up anything. I did it. Just get off of me. You're crushing me.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
Keep it suit up. If you bottles don't want to dance on board, then keep it true up.
The reggaeton, hip-hop monsters known as MS-13. This is their English recruitment song here on the Drive Home at 5. Yeah, because they are trying to expand their operations globally. But you know them best for their operations in the tri-state area, throughout New Jersey, parts of Pennsylvania, Connecticut, but especially Nassau and Suffolk County. And, oh, yeah, Corona, Elmhurst, and Jackson Heights. But the feds declared themselves to have a victory today when they walked out of a courtroom out in Strong Island. And they had not only a guilty verdict on these three menaces of society of MS-13, Milton Contreras, Oscar Wellman, Espinosa Marino. He's got four names, right? I don't trust people with three names. You can imagine a guy with four names, Oscar Wellman, Espinosa Marino. I'd like to know where he got the name Wellman from. And Jose Osman Rubio, three names. Always beware of anybody with three names. But anyway, these guys were convicted of the fatal shooting of a 19-year-old who they summoned to a park in 2014. And they said, hey, we got to talk MS-13 business, technology, because we got 18th Street, the Mexican gang that's on our jockstrap, and we need your help. So he dutifully came, because if you don't come, they're going to look for you and take a machete and separate it from your shoulders. So he shows up at a Suffolk County beach, and then all of a sudden they shoot him in the back of the head and they dump his body, and they don't even bury him in the sand, no. 2 weeks later, a beachcomber, some beach bum, you know, some surf bum, is rummaging through the dunes there, and they find this body, it's decomposing, and the local yokel authorities, they had nothing. And then all of a sudden, the Barack Obama administration changed because he was treating MS-13 like the JV, like he treated ISIS. And now rough and tough Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, came in to impose the edict that our President Donald Trump had told him that the Department of Justice and the FBI and all federal agencies, especially LIMIGRA, Immigration and Naturalization Service, and ICE would have to follow up on. And that is to smash to smithereens MS-13. Well, guys, you're doing a good job, but you got so much more to do. Don't assume that because you bagged and tagged these three murderous thugs who had tattooed on their necks like giraffes, murder, rape, control, from prison to the grave, that you should be dancing the horror or tarantella. They'll be back.